Thanks for downloading Friday Football Talk. This week we started with a look at the UEFA Europa League and UEFA Champions League. After that, we reviewed and previewed the Scottish Premiership fixtures before taking a quick look into the Championship. Following that, we headed south and took a look at last weekend's FA Cup fixtures before previewing the Barclays Premier League. And to finish the show, we took a trip round Europe. We previewed and analysed matches from Germany, Spain and Italy before looking ahead to this weekend's matches. Hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to Friday Football Talk. My name's Connor Park and joining me for this afternoon's show is Ross Clark.
Hello.
Johnny Clark as well joining us.
How you doing, Connor?
We've got Hamish Carton as well.
How you doing, Connor?
Lewis Kemp at the back.
Ho ho.
How you doing, Connor?
Matt as well. And right, over the other side we've got Callum Fisher.
Right.
And Adam Oakley.
Aye.
We start by taking a look at the UEFA Champions League and UEFA Europa League, where PSG drew 1-1 with Chelsea. And Shakhtar drew 0-0 with Bayern Munich. So we'll start with PSG-Chelsea. Did anyone see that game?
I watched it yesterday.
Your thoughts on it?
I thought it was quite a good game. Actually, one of the best games I've seen in the last kind of month or so. Chelsea dominated. I wouldn't say they dominated the first half, but they obviously took the lead about half an hour into the game, and I think they had the better chances in the first half. PSG changed something at half time. They got the ball quicker to Ibrahimovic. Chances. Cavani obviously scored the goal. It was poor marking, but Ibrahimovic had a few headers as well. And I thought PSG were unlucky not to win the game in the end. Although the result, it'll suit Chelsea better, but I don't think PSG are out of the tyre by any means.
Yeah, that's what you're saying as well. I think once it maybe got 5-10 minutes after the PSG equaliser, Chelsea looked to settle for it, which Mourinho's teams often do away from home, is settle for sort of any result that is helpful to them. Cavani as well could have scored a second. Like, he had a lovely. Sort of took it past Matic and he was very close, so PSG could have won the game and they'll take confidence from that.
You'll have to look at last year when they get the draw away at Atletico in the semis. Obviously they've done 4-1 or something in the second leg, but it's a similar kind of, obviously they've got the away goal this time, but it's a similar kind of outlook for the second leg, so it'll be interesting anyway.
Do you expect PSG to go to Stamford Bridge and kind of defend, or do you think they'll go for the attack?
Be a different approach to last year when they went, because they had I think a 3-1 advantage last year, so they obviously need to score. 0-0's no use to them, so I think they'll have a go. And to be honest, on last night's evidence, I think they've got a half decent chance of going through. I believe that.
I don't think PSG are good enough defensively to have to set up around being as defensive as maybe you would associate with Mourinho's Chelsea. So I think they will go.
Which is ironic, because the other week there, the back four was the most expensive back four to date in the world, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think the thing about Chelsea is they were always going to. I thought yesterday would be a draw. I thought it was pretty. It was a pretty Mourinho like.
Did you put money in that?
I'm not getting into that. Yesterday, pretty much Mourinho performance. I think it was. I'm not saying part of the bus, but it was always going to try and get a draw. It was a game he didn't want to go into and lose.
Obviously, the other game in the Champions League last night saw Shakhtar draw 0-0 at home to Bayern Munich, with Xavi Alonso being sent off for Bayern there. On the whole, probably Bayern Munich happy to take the draw considering the demand sent off, but with kind of Shakhtar being at home, they would have been looking at least to get something out of the game, which they've done. They're going to take a draw back to Munich, and obviously you'd expect them to try and nick a goal there.
Interesting you say home, because Shakhtar were actually playing 642 miles away, to be precise, from their home stadium in Lviv, I think it was.
Yeah.
And that's the equivalent distance of Glasgow to Brussels, so that just shows you how far they're going for a home game, basically an away game for them. And somebody say it's closer to Munich than it is to actually Donetsk, so that's a strange situation definitely for Shakhtar. But I think they'll be pretty chuffed with the draw, and the fact that they've stopped Bayern from scoring away from home as well gives them an advantage going to the Allianz.
You said that Bayern would be happy, Connor. Would any of you be happy with that draw if you were Pep Guardiola?
I think you'd be looking to get a goal away from home.
I mean, it must have been such a frustrating game for them, because at one point they had more than 75% possession.
Especially when you've scored 8 at the weekend, score none in midweek, so you're a bit of a disappointing result.
They'll still be massive favourites going into the tie at the Allianz, because, like Hamish said, they scored 8 against Hamburg. It's obviously a little bit different Shakhtar to Hamburg, but you can expect them to win. They've not lost a single Bundesliga game at home, so only one draw as well, and they were down to 10 men there as well.
In the last round of games this week, FC Basel face Porto, and Schalke host Real Madrid. Into the Europa League, where we've got quite a few English and Scottish involvement. We'll start with Celtic's game at home to Inter Milan on Thursday night, 8:05 kickoff at Parkhead. Two Celtic fans in the room with us, so we'll go to you first for your thoughts on that one.
Huge game. I think it's, for us, it's to kind of gauge where we are, because obviously we've not really came up against anyone in the caliber of Inter Milan. Apart from, Matt's pointing to Aberdeen, but no, it's a totally different game for us. For me, like, in terms of how you would set up again in this game, there's been a lot of debate of whether we should go defensive or whether we should sit back and just kind of soak up the pressure. I think we should go. I don't think we should change anything than what we've been doing the last couple of weeks. I think it's been working, and I actually think we should start with Armstrong and Mackay Stephen. Mm-hmm. I think they'll cause a lot of problems for the inter defence, which I think is probably their weakest part of the team.
There's been a bit of talk about it playing into Italian teams' hands, this kind of pressing, attacking football, the way we played against Juve and AC Milan as well. We lost both those 3-0 at home, but I don't think Inter are half as good as either of those two teams. I mean, you look at AC last season, they had Balotelli, Kaká playing. I don't know who Inter Milan have that really worries me, to be totally honest. Maybe you can give me a name, Callum.
I think the player you'd maybe want to look at, obviously they've got Shaqiri on loan from Bayern, you've got Mauro Icardi there as well, who when he wants to is a really, really good player.
Freddy Guarín as well. Yeah,
Freddy Guarín as well. The thing about Inter though is they're always sort of, you never really know with them. They haven't been consistent this season, and when they've been poor, they've been really poor, and certainly at Parkhead, where I think you've sold out
it was sold out a couple of weeks ago.
So I think if the tie's going to be won for Celtic, I think it's going to need to be won in the home leg, which I think is doable, because Inter really aren't that good a team, and their position in Serie A shows that.
The only thing that might worry Celtic slightly is the fact that Inter have picked up a wee bit of form in the last couple of weeks, beating Palermo and Atalanta. Obviously Celtic,
and this has been our best run this season.
Yeah, you've been in good form, but I think obviously the teams that, with all due respect to Scottish teams, but the teams that Inter are playing are better teams than what Celtic are playing.
I think it's fair enough.
But I mean, Celtic have done what they've had to do. They've won matches. They're obviously in every competition. So Celtic get into the game, we'll fancy their chances. But in my own opinion, I think the game will finish a draw.
I don't know if it was 0-0, maybe we'll take it. But I think, just looking last year, obviously we played Milan in the Champions League. We played better in the away leg than we did in the home leg. Home leg, we were utterly rank. So, you know, it could be the same case here, maybe, where we perform better away from home than we do at home.
You're probably, if you're wanting to play any Italian team that's in Europe at the moment, Inter Milan would be the team you're wanting to play.
I think the result flattered them a wee bit at the weekend. I heard some of the reports, and they were 2-1 up at Atlanta when the red card came in. So the boy got a yellow card and then a second yellow, I think, a minute after or something. And they obviously won 4-1 in the end, so I think it flattered them a wee bit.
I think Celtic as well were quite fortunate the weekend in the last minute. You know, I know St Johnstone didn't have a lot of pressure
in
the actual game, but the Gordon save was
a great save.
We'll obviously go more into it, but I think we definitely put our foot off the gas in the second half. I think that kind of contributed to them getting
Thursday night in mind, though. Yeah. Dial hasn't told them to take their foot off the gas, but the team's probably just
psychological.
You also have to look at who's in charge of Inter. I mean, Mancini's European record when he was at Inter.
Yeah, great point.
But at Inter beforehand, and then City really wasn't good. He's notoriously good domestically, but not. He just doesn't seem to have it in Europe. As well as that, you were saying about Inter picking up form. We're only two or so weeks ago, you had Icardi and Guarín, you know, with the whole chucking their shirts into the crowd, getting them chucked back after a defeat to Sassuolo. And Sassuolo,
a good with pronunciation, last year it was Cagliari.
Sassuolo are a decent team, but I mean, if they can beat them, then I think Celtic can beat them as well.
Quick scoreline prediction from you two then.
1-0 Celtic.
2-1 Celtic.
So move on to Tottenham. They face Fiorentina at White Hart Lane on Thursday night as well. Johnny, your thoughts on that one?
Well, it'll be a difficult tie, but I think the main thing is to get a keep a clean sheet and get a couple of goals, because I've pointed this out to you before, but the away leg is 3 days before the Capital One Cup final against Chelsea, and so obviously we want to be a couple of goals ahead by that time. And we're not exactly going to want to rest players away in Florence, so, but it can hardly be ahead of a bigger game, so we'll need to have a good performance tomorrow night.
Do you feel Europa League's an kind of integral part of your season this year in terms of getting success in the competition? Obviously, for some teams, when they go into drop down to Europa League, when they drop down to the Champions League, it's not exactly the most important competition that they're in. How do you think that Europa League kind of fits into Tottenham's season?
It's kind of different this year, but because the winners obviously get the Champions League place. I think teams like Tottenham and teams like Inter as well, they'll be wanting to win the competition.
You know, Pochettino,
more so than other years.
Pochettino said when he was manager of Southampton that he didn't like the Europa League, and that's a quote. And when he came in, when he took charge of Spurs, he had an interview, and he said he was going to take it seriously because of the Champions League being available for the winner. And we're not in the race for top four. We're not favourites, so it could be a realistic chance for us. Our most realistic chance of getting Champions League.
Do you think you can win it, the Europa League?
We're not favourites, that's for sure. I personally think Wolfsburg are favourites to win it.
I think the other thing as well, Fiorentina have been in decent form, sitting fourth, I think, currently in Serie A. So they won't be there to lose. They'll be out to win.
They'll be in very much the same situation as Spurs, whereby their prime focus will be to get into the Champions League.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it should be a good tie. Both teams have got sort of similar ambitions in the competition. They're quite well matched. I would still fancy Spurs to do it, though.
Yeah,
especially the first legs at White Hart Lane.
Yeah.
So I think Spurs will win that and win the tie as well.
When the draw was made, I think Fiorentina were sitting 10th in Serie A. They've just been flying recently, it seems. But similar situation to Spurs, because we were 7th or 8th when the draw was made, and I think we're 5th, 6th now. So, you know, we've moved up the table. But we've been good in recent weeks, you know, beating Arsenal. So,
Joy, just a quick scoreline prediction from you.
I'll say 2-0.
2-0.
2-0 to Spurs.
The other games involving English sides see Everton travel to Young Boys and Liverpool host Besiktas on Thursday night as well. That ends the first part of our look at UEFA Champions League and UEFA Europa League. Join us after the break, where we'll have a look at Scottish football.
Hello and welcome back to the second part of Friday Football Talk. We're now moving on to Scotland. We've also changed our host. Connor's having a back seat so that he can have a wee talk in Falkirk. It's now back to Hamish and Ross for our presenting skills.
For the first time since episode one, I think it's a shame. Yep. But.
So where else can we start? We'll start with Celtic. So obviously a decent win on Saturday.
Absolutely. We, you know, very similar to what our games we've played in the last couple of games, actually, where we've started really well and then the second half kind of put our foot off the gas. Obviously, I thought Johansson's goal was terrific, actually. Really great technique, great skill. And I might throw this out there, but I think you should be player of the year. I don't know what other people think.
I heard that mentioned, but... I think it's an outside choice. There's nobody really.
I think Ryan Jack as well at Aberdeen deserves a shout, but Johansson for me has definitely been the best player this year. And the thing is as well is that I think after Van Dijk goes, I think he'll be the next player to move on to pastures new, as you say. I think he's just been a step above what usually is this season. He's been absolutely fantastic for us and probably the key player for us in this recent run of games that we've had.
I think it's worth pointing out St Johnstone were probably the best team we've played in this run. I think we should give them a wee bit of credit.
Yeah, well, they were very unlucky not to score, obviously, with Craig Gordon's fantastic save
best save I've seen in a while.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we'll move to our northerly correspondent, Johnny, to give us a wee bit of insight in Ross County's win against Motherwell.
What do you think about that one? How important is that one, is the race for survival?
Yeah, I just think Motherwell sort of went on a little bit of a good run after they appointed a new manager, but they're back to sort of the ways they were before. But for Ross County, it's a ginormous 3 points, and they're 6 points behind. It looks like they're all but relegated. They've got 2/3 of Motherwell's points. They're now only 3 behind them and St Mirren.
Yes, so. See, it's even better for County that the fact St Mirren lost again, unfortunately.
Just the 1 point at home there, it's a meagre return.
Two points. Yeah.
Oh, of course, the draw with Dundee United.
Yeah, and County. But County can go to Celtic Park as well and get points. Done that before. So.
I'm going to throw this out there, but does anyone think Motherwell can finally get in a wee run of games, considering the talent they've got in that squad? Guys like Sutton and Lasley and whatnot.
I think it's going to be a case
of what Hibs last
Keith
year.
Keith Lasley, talent.
Right, well, okay, I'll give a better examples. Sutton, there you go.
I don't think they can. I think it's been pointed out, obviously, it's very similar form to what Hibs was like at the start, towards the end of last season. I've seen them a few times this season, Motherwell, and they're just
such a lack of confidence in the team.
It's completely crazy the contrast to last season.
Exactly. They made their own manager appointment, if you ask me. When you're sitting in the bottom of the league in that position, you don't hire somebody who's not played or managed in the Scottish League before. You hire somebody that knows what they're doing. They lost Henrik Oyama in January, and that's a massive loss. And to be honest, they need to sign more experienced players. What good is signing young players on loan from English clubs when you're in a relegation dogfight at the bottom of the league?
They've got the boy from Everton who was kind of highly touted, but
it's chucking the freak out. Young talent in at the deep end, though. And to be honest, to me, you'll have to look at experience both on the pitch and in management. And the most high quality player they had there was Henrik Oyama, and they went and lost him in January. He decided he wasn't coming back, and to me, there's only one way they're going, and it's down.
I think it's bold prediction. I think it's very difficult though for a team in that kind of situation to lift yourself, because if you keep week after week losing, dropping points, and obviously there was it 5 or 6 new players they brought in.
I think at the start of the season as well, they suffered from a lot of injuries. Guys like Stevie Hamill was out for quite a long time. I think that's obviously contributed to it. It's just kind of steamrolled from there.
It's just a complete lack of confidence, and you're not really seeing any signs there of any, like, usually if you've got a team, you know, that's in the relegation zone, you're looking for any signs of them, you know, looking to improve their form, but there just aren't any from Motherwell there, really.
I think Lewis pointed out that Motherwell have a few talented players, but I'd argue that both Ross County and St Mirren are better footballing sides than Motherwell, and Ross County proved that on Saturday.
Thanks, Johnny. Elsewhere in the SPL, we had Dundee beating Partick Thistle with a last-minute Paul McGowan goal. His first goal for the club, even though he's been there for quite a while now. But that kind of shows, I think, that Thistle have really been slipping the last wee while. So what's your views on Thistle?
To be fair, though, I think Paul Hartley came out after the game and said that Dundee were lucky to get a win there. Yeah. I mean, what I said, it looked like a bit of a drab game. But, I mean, Thistle are such a weird team, because I always think that they're going to win for some reason, and yet they've got lots of options up front.
The problem with Thistle is that they're quite predictable, I feel. A lot of the players are all kind of similar, and there's no real kind of game changer in the team that can just you know, win you a game or have that killer pass or killer instinct to get you those 3 points.
Also, great result for Kilmarnock, picking up from obviously Johnson leaving. Gary Locke coming in, and he's done a great job so far, getting a vital home win with a last minute Sammy Clingan free kick.
The players seem to be playing for him, because I saw they've been saying that they want him in the job, and they've vowed to do their best to get him in that job. So I saw he also dedicated his win to Alan Johnson, which I don't think Kelly Cow was too pleased about. But talking about Kelly Cow, he was in hospitality for that game, wasn't he?
So he was indeed.
I think he had quite a, what does he call it, carnage? I think
carnage. Yes.
Messy night for him. But no, it was a good win for Kelly. I was quite surprised with that. Especially, I thought Dundee United, after their win at Stranraer the previous weekend, didn't show any sort of hangover from losing Armstrong and Mackay Stevens, but that result was a bit of a shock.
On Sunday, we saw Aberdeen go to Hamilton and get the 3 points, reverse result basically of the last time they met at New Douglas Park. Aberdeen won 3-0, but the match was taken over somewhat by some controversy on the refereeing front, which I don't like to talk about, but I'll leave that to Matt to discuss.
Well, I mean, first off, I think we've got to credit Aberdeen on like a very dominant victory. I mean, if he's watched, obviously it was in front of the TV, and I think right from the start you could see that we were up for it. I mean, 2-0 up after 9 minutes or something. Sorry. I think, and then obviously the Rooney goal that never was, I think, I mean, you only got to blame the assistant referee, in my opinion. I mean, Willie Collum can't really see from where that is, but the cameras caught it straight away, like on the main camera, and it was like, obviously in the artificial turf, that black kind of fake mud stuff that comes up, I mean, it was clearly over the line, but, and then the view that the linesman had, though, I mean, he's not even in line with the post to disrupt his view. He's at an angle where he can see it, and then
The difficult thing is for the linesman, he's got so many things to be doing at that point. He's trying to judge offside, so he's looking across the line. I know the shot's been taken, but he's still looking across the line, and it's happened. It was a wrong decision ultimately, but it's happened very, very quickly.
And saying that though, it's a foot over the line. Like, I can understand if it was maybe on the line and it was debatable. But
okay, but
foot
the
over,
speed that happens at, I'm not. It is a wrong decision ultimately.
Yeah,
it should have been a goal. But at the end of the day, it's not really a big issue because it's not come back to.
But could have.
Aberdeen.
If it was 0-0, I mean, somebody pointed out on Sky Sports this week, I mean, if it was like, if this was a game in the split against Celtic, say, and had the opportunity for Aberdeen to go ahead of them, it's hypothetical, of course, Hamish, don't look at anything else, but and that happens, you know, it's whether or not it's, I mean, I don't think we can afford like goal line technology. I mean, that is the key issue. I mean, it only happens once in every blue moon that there's a controversial decision like this, but I think that something needs to be done about it, because that can cost teams, and it could cost teams dearly. It could cost St Mirren later on the season in a vital relegation scrap, you know.
Well, the thing is, it's interesting to see the two linesmen from Saturday have both been dropped down the divisions.
I'm not surprised, because
one of them, in fairness, Conor, that does happen. See the linesmen generally, the same way I called them a few weeks ago, they get reshuffled about between the Championship and the SPL.
One of them's dropped down to League One, though.
That happens as well. It's just one of these things, but it could be linked to that, definitely, but it does happen generally.
I think though, as soon as after that goal, I mean, I was having a look at the linesman after like that whole the rest of the game, and he was so unsure on every decision that, like, he was waiting on Willie Collum to make decisions for him. You know,
it's probably in the back of his mind.
Well,
that
he ran right off at the end of the first half, and he shot down the tunnel as fast as he could. So I mean,
well, it'll be in the back of his mind, and I think, in fairness, it wasn't just that line's decisions. I think Goodwillie had a goal ruled out.
Yeah, exactly.
Shouldn't have been. And
Considine
the penalty. For Rooney.
The penalty was actually awful.
It's one of these things. Referees aren't going to get everything right, but it is difficult.
I mean, we can't take it away, though, from Aberdeen. I mean, after the words, I mean, we were still so dominant. I mean, I fear kind of for Hamilton now. I think they're going to go to Parkhead.
I was going to bring up. No wins in seven now, Hamilton, since Cannon's come in. They've gone right down the table. They're in fifth now. And I mean, from a team who were challenging for second place for a wee while,
I think one of the big problems with Hamilton is they've sold a lot of their players, and you know, Tony Andrew was one of their key players, and selling him was, although maybe they had to do it, you know, it's a huge loss to them as well.
Antoine Currie,
Jason Scotland, he's what, 37-year-old, he doesn't move about the pitch very well at all.
He had a good chance
honest.
On Sunday
did,
and just fluffed his lines completely.
But usually he holds up the ball, and you'll have Andrew kind of play off him. But obviously Andrew's not there, and Scotland's pretty old, and so
the only thing
always can't
for,
really do that.
For Hamilton is that obviously Celtic will have a tough game on Thursday, so that might be the only thing. But equally, you'd still expect it.
Celtic will just, they can put out a reserve team and put three or four past Hamilton. I mean, you saw them, like I said, straight from off on Sunday, and they just weren't the team that they were 6 months ago. You know,
I have to say, I mean, this is looking way far in the future, but to me, I think what they're starting to show now is it wasn't a fluke. They had obviously a very sound tactical manager in their job there, and they had decent players, but early possible relegation candidates next year.
I don't think they'll get the top six this year. I think Dundee will probably.
I think the big thing for me is what they've shown is they're very shrewd when it comes to selling players, but when it comes to actually putting the money out to buying players, they're not doing it, and you can only go so far, especially in the Premiership. It works different in the Championship. You can get away with kind of bringing your own players, but you need to have a bit of money in the back there to bring money through.
In all honesty, is there any appeal playing at Hamilton? I mean, apart from if you're a youth player, you know, I mean, they know they're going to get.
But in terms of attracting talent, if you're looking at that just now and seeing the run they're on, it's not exactly full stadiums, and I think what you find is once the focus starts to drop away from them, it makes them a less attractive club to go to.
I think you look at it as well, maybe it's not a case of, obviously Alex Neil was a good manager.
He won't be the only answer.
Yeah, it's proven that in Norwich as well, but it might not be a case of necessarily anything that Martin Canning's changed or done. It could just be that they're now playing to their, you know, what their talent level is, exactly.
A fluke, I think, is a bit unharsh, because they were playing well. But
you see it a lot, you get teams that start off the season really
quickly. Yeah, I was going to say that.
Perfect
Thistle was the same their season when they came up.
It drops off for one reason or another.
It's the surprise element, I think, for a lot of people that kind of galvanises it. But then I think
once you know how to play against that team, then that's when they start dropping points.
I think one of the key things as well is the kind of playing teams four times a season. You know how to play against Motherwell and Kilmarnock and that. You don't really know how to play against Hamilton because you've not came against these players before. And they do play, they did at the start of the season, play a very attacking side.
Plus, there's always ways to combat.
Plus, as well, obviously, you were saying they were up and challenging for second. Once they start to drop off and there isn't really anything to play for, players can sort of just shut off for the season and the form just kind of goes. An example of that would have been, and the quality difference is big, but with Newcastle last season in the Premier League, when they had nothing to play for, they just kind of shut off and were really poor. So the same could be happening at Hamilton.
So this week sees Aberdeen take on St Mirren. At Pittodrie, it's a big game for St Mirren, big game for Aberdeen as well, keep their run up, keep some pressure on Celtic. St Mirren, I think, will be going there hoping to get something. It's a long shot, but you never know. We got something there earlier on the season, coming from 2-0 down to get the point. How do you see that one going, Matt? I think I can guess. But,
I'm very confident, yeah. I think if we just play the same way, I think Kenny McLean might have something to say. In the game, that'd be a good game for him if he could come back and get a goal against us. But no, I'm very confident. I think we've got enough options now in the team. That one signing seems to have done the business. And I think we'll win confidently.
Fair enough. Johnny, Inverness take on Kilmarnock. Another northerly correspondent giving us his input. Inverness in great form, good result the weekend against St Mirren.
Yeah, they both won at the weekend, but as you say, St Mirren not exactly the most difficult team to play away from home. Killy coming back into it a little bit, and both Killy've still got a decent chance of getting the top six, as we're just talking about Hamilton dropping off, so Killy potential.
I don't think Inverness have got the credit they deserve, to be honest. I think John Hughes done a great job at Inverness.
And there's still potential to come second as well ahead of Aberdeen.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at Aberdeen 3 points behind Celtic, Inverness 3 points behind Aberdeen, so what's more likely, Inverness second or Aberdeen top?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Elsewhere, we see Motherwell take on Dundee, big game for Motherwell. County are away to Thistle, and Dundee United take on St Johnstone, so Dundee United will be looking to get back on track after last week's result. Moving on to the Championship now, there were wins for Hearts, Queen of the South, Hibs and Falkirk. Dropped points, but we'll start with Rangers and Hibs result, winning on Friday night. Great result for Hibs to keep the pressure on for that playoff place. Actually overtaking Rangers now, is that right?
It's 2 points ahead.
Is it two?
It's three games
kind of teams above us, but yeah.
So what was your views in that game?
I think we actually played alright. It was one of the better performances recently, which doesn't say a lot. And Hibs took their chances, which we didn't. But I think what it shows is, I mean, we had quite a few chances, Johnny. You were at the game with your dad. Yeah. I mean, we had chances, we just didn't take them. And I think what's evident, again, and I've said it a couple times on this, is that there's no confidence there. We've got a manager that doesn't want to be there, but we can't afford to sack him, and he's not going to walk away from pay. Do you know what I mean? So it's just a continuing kind of wheel of garbage.
Now we know the title
on the
podcast.
Cheers for that. On the park.
The general consensus around the ground at the full-time whistle with the more sensible fans was that it was a lot better. There's a lot of passion there from the Rangers players.
And I think what you have to see, you have to look at who wasn't playing there. There was no McCulloch, no Foster, no Simonson.
Chris Boyd was dire in that game.
He's getting no confidence. He's got massive drop off.
Massive blow for Rangers as well, because Miller looked like he was right up for the game. against Hibs, and then he got taken off, didn't he?
Well, he seems like the only
that chance he got cleared off.
He seems like the only one that has any element of professionalism about him. Sometimes at Rangers, the way he kind of carries himself on the park, obviously he's not really got it in physically anymore, but he still is a good player. You know, he knows what he's doing on the park. But it's just disappointing, and it's getting to the point where I'm starting to give up on this season, and if we can get things sorted off the park, I would take another season in the Championship, to be honest.
Can you afford to another season in the Championship?
If we get the right people in at the EGM, then yes.
Fair enough. So, we saw Connor coming to you, Raith Rovers, Falkirk, 2-each last minute goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so it seemed pretty sad there.
No, I mean, decent performance. But
win for Queen of the South as well. Hibs obviously winning.
I think the thing is, we have to look at it and say, well, we're going for fourth, but we've actually got a chance, you would think, hopefully, touch wood, to get back fourth this weekend. I mean, Hearts are playing Queen of the South, we're playing Livingston. You'd like to think we could beat Livingston at home. Hearts have obviously on this run at the moment that you would expect them to beat Queen of the South. But I think the big kind of shock with Falkirk fans at the moment is we're dropping points, kind of stupid points, a couple of draws there, and when games that we should have won, we should have had Dumbarton, fair enough, because they did come back and fight back, but Raith, we should have been 3 or 4-1 up. But the big thing is we're still in the hunt, and Scottish Cup quarter final in the hunt for fourth place. It's an exciting time, and hopefully we can just kind of keep it going.
So we'll just quickly go over the fixtures for this weekend. Raith Rovers play Rangers again. Cowdenbeath against Alloa. Falkirk Livingston, with Falkirk looking to get back on track. Hibs Dumbarton and Queen of the South Hearts. So a big game for both.
I was just going to make the point there. It's actually a bigger weekend in the Championship than I think a lot of people realise in terms of the final outcomes of the season. Alloa, Cowdenbeath, that whoever wins that could put themselves a long way into getting into the Championship for next season.
Especially after Cowdenbeath with a good result at Dumbarton.
Dumbarton are known to go and pull off a few shocks. They could go Easter Road and get something. Raith could take something off of Rangers. And then, of course, you've got Hearts, Queen of the South. So I think
there's any could in Raith taking points off us. I think they will.
Again. Fair enough.
The thing is, teams are travelling with no fear to Ibrox nowadays.
Well, right. I think a lot of that has to do with the players they're facing and the circumstances surrounding the club at the moment.
Fair enough. So that rounds up Scottish football for this week. We will move on to English football after a short break.
Hello and welcome back to the Friday Football Talk, the third part of our brilliant podcast. We're talking about English football now, the bit that Connor Part loves, and we'll start with Preston against Man United from Monday night. Did anyone see this game? What's the comment on it?
Yeah, I watched it. I thought United got a bit of harsh criticism. I think it was just their attacking line that were really poor. I mean, Falcao, I don't know what he's playing at. He's just hopeless. I mean, when you're bringing on Fellaini and he's the one that's getting the goals, you know, it's quite concerning. But I don't think United should take back Falcao personally. But I think United, very professional second half performance when they went behind. I thought they were solid. I mean, questions could be raised about the Rooney penalty, but yeah,
no,
Ross.
No, I don't think it can. I know on paper he's technically fallen, and it could be argued it's a dive, but if he doesn't move, if he doesn't fall out of the way of that, he's going to be taken down anyway. So I think it was a penalty, and for once I actually did agree with Phil Dowd on that one. So I can see the argument for it, but I think definitely a penalty.
Can we change your name on this pod to referee sympathiser? Because I don't think you've disagreed with one yet.
That's great chat. Did you think the Man United game was a flaky result?
I bet. What, for who? For Preston?
Oh, for Man
United. How could it be a flaky result if they won?
Aston Villa played Leicester on Sunday. There were other games other than Man United. The miracle of Tim Sherwood carries on. Actually, I'm just looking at this now, and apparently it finished 2-1, which I never even knew about, because I just walked out the room when the second goal went in. Who scored for Leicester? Leicester scored late on, aye?
It was Kramaric, wasn't it? The header.
Was he? Yeah. Good lad.
He's a good player. He scored a lot for Rijeka in the Croatian League. So.
And Europa League as well. Good win for Villa there and Tim Sherwood. A man I know you know well, Johnny. What are your thoughts on that one?
Now, Tim Sherwood's a man I've got mixed opinions on. If you want a team to be motivated, if you want them to score more goals, which is probably the priority for Villa, then I believe he's the right man. If you want a team to play with finesse and pass the ball well, he's probably not your man. He'll get the ball direct to Benteke, which is exactly what he said he would do in his press conference.
He's also looking to make it quite a hostile place and daunting for opponents, Villa Park. So that's
exactly,
what I heard in his interview.
He'll get the fans on side. He will. He didn't quite manage that with Spurs, I think, because Spurs were kind of expecting a manager with more background in the game. But with Villa, if he gets the fans on his side, he can do well there.
Yep. Bradford City's FA Cup fairy tale continued. They beat Sunderland on Sunday, and that was the fifth Premier League team they've beaten, I think, in the last 3 or 4 years, including their League Cup run to the final a couple of years ago where they lost to Swansea. But fantastic win for them, just backing up the win against Chelsea, showing it probably wasn't a fluke.
John Stead doing well again, scoring.
Scored in every round.
Yeah, I think one thing that came out of it was like the Bradford fans were singing, "Are you watching BBC?" Yeah. So it seemed as though they were quite up for it because of that, because it was like no one's paying attention to us, even though that was a ridiculous decision, I think.
Well, BBC stubbed them again, so.
Yeah, do you mind telling me why you think it was ridiculous?
Not to have the Bradford game on the telly. Well, I think it's more a case of the BBC, because they don't have Premier League rights, will do anything to show a game between two Premier League teams.
Yeah, also doing the next round as well.
Did you see the state of the pitch at Bradford?
Well, it's got nothing to do with the pitch. It's
wouldn't
it
look good in telly though?
See, to be fair, we pay the BBC. We fund the BBC, okay? And I mean, BT are a commercial company. BBC aren't. Bradford have been the story of the cup. And the fact that it's not been televised, I think, is absolutely shocking.
I think you can all,
they actually apologised for it in the match of the day.
I think you can all see that, obviously, they're a cup team who have pulled off a lot of cup shocks. So to me, it was obvious that if there was going to be one game this weekend that was going to pull off that cup shock, it was that game. It was going to, obviously, because it was expecting to be a cup shock, it was one everyone wanted to see. So why it wasn't on terrestrial television, I don't know.
I know why it wasn't on TV, because the cup replay between Sunderland and Fulham, they had to decide what game was on TV before the cup replay, so they didn't know who Bradford were going to be playing.
And also viewing figures. Realistically, what are you going to get more viewing figures from? Man United game.
It's nothing to do with the Man United. It's Aston Villa Leicester.
Yeah.
Considering the time it was shown at as well, was it not a quarter past 12?
The thing is though, right, see if they're talking about the whole magic of the FA Cup and things like that, would you not rather see the smaller team against the Premier League team who have already put out probably the best team in England at the moment, and Chelsea in the previous round, as opposed to a team that can barely score and a team that's bottom of the Premier League? Like, what game would you rather watch there?
Well, it could have been Bradford v Fulham.
I would still rather watch Bradford Fulham
than Leicester Aston Villa.
Absolutely. Because you watch it every week in the Premiership. We can watch like that kind of fixture every week.
That's like saying you'd rather watch Spartans against Berwick rather than Celtic against Rangers.
No, it's not, because
It's really not. Your face just said it all there.
No, but you've answered my question, but that's interesting. I just thought the pitch and that. You're saying the pitch doesn't matter. To me, it does. If you're watching a game, the pitch.
Did you not see the Hampden pitch against the Old Firm?
It wasn't that state. It wasn't in that state.
I don't know how they got away with that. Folk are saying, oh, it's the same for both teams. If I was Sunderland, I'd be raging. You go to a stadium and the state of that
Bradford
pitch.
Bradford still managed to play perfectly good football.
They're used to it.
They play there every
adapted
week.
To it. Blackpool's pitch is a disgrace as well. Mm-hmm. Absolute disgrace.
Well,
and
they've got their own troubles just now anyway. So the pitch won't be their highest priority.
Should be up there though.
You can't have points on the board. On
you can't have a terrible pitch. They'll still have Premier League money coming through.
But there's no regulations really in terms of, well, obviously you've got pitch, what you're all in terms of like pitch size, but there's no regulations as to how good.
That's because you can't measure how good a pitch is, can
exactly.
you?
Exactly, but
it's
just the
naked eye looking at it.
I don't think it really had too much bearing in the game, I don't think.
I don't think a TV company considers how the look of a pitch they're picking a game.
No,
definitely not.
Pitch depends on the quality of the game though, doesn't it?
Yep. Me and Johnny are singing for the same hymn sheet here.
Certainly be Sunderland's argument.
But you're not going to get a good quality game with Aston Villa and Leicester.
Quality game, I thought. I enjoyed it.
Did you watch it, Lewis?
Yes, I did watch the game. During work, I saw it.
The other thing is
I'm working very hard, mate.
So the other thing is, you're going about the viewing figures, but at the end of the day, that game kicked off about 12:15 on a Sunday, so
I mean, that's not exactly going to... The time of that isn't the best for attracting figures anyway. And that's, if you ask me, had it been Bradford, you would have got more figures on that.
For a company like the BBC as well, they shouldn't be concerned about viewing figures. They should be concerned about getting...
The public interest, yeah.
That's what they're there for.
Exactly. A BT can be concerned about that because they're a commercial company, but BBC aren't.
Yeah. Well, a game that you couldn't criticise a pitch for was the Emirates Stadium on Sunday. Arsenal beat Middlesbrough 2-0. Middlesbrough's famous cup run coming to an end. Any see that one?
I think Arsenal will be quite happy to get through that one, especially after Middlesbrough putting out City in the last round. Not many people really gave Middlesbrough a chance, but I think with the City result, their fans probably went there believing they could maybe cause an upset again. But Arsenal and Giroud, I'm sure, will be delighted to be getting back on track.
They seem to be really hitting a bit of form. Apart from that result at White Hart Lane, they've gone a great run, Arsenal.
Seems like quite an Arsenal thing to do, get themselves out of the title race and then decide they're going to put good results together. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they face Man U in the next round of the Cup.
Yeah.
So that should be interesting.
Got a tough game at Crystal Palace in the Premier League at the weekend as well.
Yeah, well, just going to come on to Crystal Palace at the moment. You were talking about Arsenal playing Man U there. One of those has got to go out in the next round. It could open the tournament right up for Liverpool, who I've been tipping right from the start, apart from when they played Bolton. They beat Crystal...
So you haven't really been tipping them from the start?
Well, I've tipped them since Monday. They beat Crystal Palace at the weekend after going behind. Your thoughts on that game, Adam?
Well, I've only seen the highlights. I never saw the game. I was working, unfortunately. But it's, even though I predicted a 4-0 Palace win in the last podcast, I honestly didn't think they'd get much out of the game. Fraser Campbell scored again, which I'm quite surprised about. I don't like Fraser Campbell, and players I don't like for Palace keep scoring and forcing me to like them. Like, I've always hated Jason Punchin, but now he's hit a patch of form, I have to like him. But I didn't expect anything from the Liverpool game, to be fair.
Fair enough. I think one other game we need to look at and put a wee bit of focus on too was Blackburn putting out Stoke. Great result for them. Boy getting a hat-trick as well. What was his name again?
Josh King. I think he scored like one goal in so many appearances or something for them.
They came from behind as well, didn't they? 1-0 down, and Stoke then a man signed off, which probably
right on half-time. It was 47th minute or something.
But that was added time as well.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
So it was 52nd.
Blackburn went in, one each at half-time, and came out and just romped, basically.
Is that Josh King used to play for Man United?
Is he on loan from Mönchengladbach still, or is he signed permanently?
No idea. I don't even know he played for Mönchengladbach.
Yeah, I think he was on loan at Blackburn from them, I think. I'm not sure if he's still on loan.
Bit of a scoreline that shocked me anyway, and probably a few others, was West Brom 4, West Ham 0. Did any see that one coming? And don't say you did, because you didn't. It's a hell of a result. Who have West Brom got in the next round?
They've got Aston Villa.
Midlands Derby there. That could be interesting.
I think it was just more of a shock that a Tony Pulis team managed to score 4 goals. quite impressive. So I think West Brom will be hoping maybe this could be their year, be outside chance. So who knows?
Yeah. So lots of good games to look forward to there in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. Good chance of small teams getting to Wembley anyway for the semi-final, similar to the Scottish Cup this year actually, which is good for the wee teams. Premier League games this week, we've got Aston Villa against Stoke, Chelsea at home to Burnley, should be a routine game, win for Chelsea there, Crystal Palace against Arsenal. Adam, do you want to comment on that game at all? You mentioned it earlier, do you fancy your chances there?
Not really.
Not at all.
No.
Moving on then, Hull against QPR, and what can you say about Hull against QPR? QPR, great away record, one win in the last game, so... They can maybe
100% win record for the new manager away from home, though.
They've always been great in the road, haven't they, QPR? So here's hoping for another 3 points for them. Swansea, Man United. That's one of the. I think these are the opening fixtures of the season that have been reversed. If I'm right in saying so, aren't they?
Swansea, Man United, definitely.
Yeah. They will all be the same because Chelsea, Burnley. Remember
Man City,
that one.
Newcastle,
yeah. Well, Man City, Newcastle's the next one. That's the Saturday night football game. It's not actually a great fixture list this weekend. Sunderland, West Brom. Sunday's a wee bit better. Spurs, West Ham could be interesting. West Ham looking for a bit of revenge after Spurs scored that Eric Dier last minute goal to beat them in the first game of the season. Everton-Leicester doesn't really appeal to me at all. And then the big game of the weekend, Southampton against Liverpool.
Yeah, definitely. Should be quite interesting. So we'll just need to wait and see how that goes. Southampton, they've been a wee bit up and down in recent times. And Liverpool, well, you just don't really know what you're going to get with Liverpool, do you? they'll hope for a decent result on Thursday and see if that takes them into good form for Sunday.
Could have an effect on them, those Europa League games. Just kind of throw a question out to you there. Do you think the Europa League has a real effect on teams playing the following Sundays? I know kind of statistics will show that it does and it doesn't in certain occasions, but do you think it really plays in players' minds? Do you think they really feel the game on the Thursday?
I don't think they admit they do, but I think it'll be kind of subconscious, even the tiredness aspect by the time you get to the kind of second half of those games on the Sunday. I mean, fair enough, if you're at home, it doesn't make an impact at all for me, but especially if you're travelling away from home, I mean, even just coming off of planes and things like that can cause you problems. But
just coming off a plane?
No, but some people do struggle with legs and stuff like that. Can
a professional footballer struggling to get off a plane?
No, but you mean like the flying can affect people like their muscles and things?
Yeah, thanks for listening to the English part of this podcast. We'll be back with more medical claims with our European part after this music.
Hello and welcome back to the fourth and final part of Friday Football Talk. We start in Spain, where last Sunday Barcelona defeated Levante 5-0. Saturday saw Real Madrid face Deportivo. They came through that one 2-0 to mean that Real Madrid stay top of the league ahead of Barcelona with 57 points. Barcelona was one behind with 6 and Atletico Madrid lagging behind 6 points behind. The title race looks like it might well go down the wire, Hamish. What's your thoughts on that?
I think they definitely will, but I think the big thing to take from the weekend's games was Atletico's shock defeat away at Celta Vigo on Sunday night. They went down 2-0 there. I think a few people fancied them to win that game. I said last week I would be shocked and surprised if any of the top three teams in La Liga dropped points, and obviously Barca and Real pretty comfortably won their games, Barca especially. Atletico really shocked there. I was actually even more shocked by Villarreal, who I think have been one of the form teams in Europe, going down 2-0 at Rayo Vallecano. Rayo Vallecano, they're a kind of mid-table La Liga team, but Villarreal have been going really well, but they're back down to 6th now, and I was just shocked by that. But I think it's a real bad result for Atletico, and they're now, for all of the praise we gave Diego Simeone's side last week after their triumph in the Madrid derby, they're now 6 points away from Barca and a further 7 points away from Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. You could argue with only what 15 or so games left in the season, you could argue that's it finished.
Only more chance of Valencia catching them up in 4th. They're only 3 points behind. So
well, there's every bit as much chance of Valencia doing it. No one's really talking about them, so I was really surprised that Atletico went down in such a kind of measly effort.
Only one defeat in 10 as well for them, so they are really starting to creep up.
It's just the away form for these teams. Barca and Real go to these small grounds and win comfortably. They don't seem to be able to do it. Atletico were doing it last year. They've still done really well this year. You've got to remember they're still in the Champions League. They're still going well there.
Might well be a distraction for them.
It could well be, but at the end of the day, you wonder if they were ever going to win the league. People have been saying they could do it again, but was it ever really going to happen?
So, well, it's always traditionally been dominated by the big two. So
last year, I think it was a miracle that they won it last year, to be honest. I still maintain it's one of the biggest footballing achievements ever to separate that kind of stronghold of Real. Not just to separate them, but to go ahead of both of them. I think it would just be too much for them this year.
Interesting, you were talking about Vallecano. Did you see the Mark Warburton's getting fired by Brentford and Vallecano manager was maybe the favourite to take the job? I don't know his name personally, but
they're a small club. I don't know his name either. They're a small club, really tough place to go.
Cliche
in there, sorry, I didn't mean that. But really, really horrible place to go, and it's kind of unusual in Spain, but it's, I mean, you kick the ball away and it'll go away onto the street. It's a tiny wee place to go, and the big teams have struggled there in the past. I remember Real Madrid went there a couple of years ago and the game was called off because of locals cutting the wires and the electricals, and it was played the following day. I don't think it affected Real, but it's just a really horrible place to go, and that's why I wasn't really surprised Villarreal went down, but at the same way, the way they've been going, Vallecano aren't a great side. It was a bit of a shock.
Certainly looking ahead to this weekend's fixtures, you'd expect the top four to really come through with full points out of it. Barcelona travel to Malaga, who, although they're seventh, their form's not been too bad. That's about the only kind of half chance of a shock. Atletico Madrid there at Almeria, who lies 16th. Real Madrid travel to Elche, who are lagging near the bottom. And then for Valencia, who, as we said, are creeping up on Atletico, they travel to bottom of the league, Cordoba. Look at my Spanish pronunciation.
Well, it's not exactly Spanish pronunciation, Cordoba.
Took me by surprise there.
That will be... I do fancy them to win that, Valencia, and I'll say it again, although I'll probably regret this, I'll be mightily surprised if either of the top four drop points this week. I think they'll all win. And I said that last week, but I think they'll all win comfortably.
Can I just bring up a wee point when you were talking about Villarreal? Villarreal, they face Red Bull Salzburg in the Europa League. And both Villarreal and Red Bull Salzburg have been the top goal scorers in the group stages. So that should be a really cracking game. It'll probably be 0-0 now that I've said that, but it should be a good game with lots of goals. So that's one of the highlights of Europa League this round of fixtures.
Very impressed with Salzburg in Celtic's group, and I think they will go quite far and actually tip them to put out Villarreal over the two legs. And I mean, they've got a great record. Last year they were talking about winning it. They beat Ajax 6-1 on an aggregate. Obviously they've lost Sadio Mane to Southampton, but
they lost Soriano as well. I think he went to China.
I was a bit shocked by that one, but I do fancy them to beat Villarreal and then go even further in the tournament. I wouldn't be surprised if they're our last two team.
So we move now into Italy. It was a strange weekend at the top of the league, with both Juventus and Roma dropping points. It was a 0-0 draw for Roma at home to Parma. Meanwhile, Juventus drew 1-1, I believe, was the final score there.
2-2 was Cesena. And a bit of a shock result, because Cesena are second bottom of the league at the moment, and you really would be expecting Juventus to win that game, considering how far, well, they're pretty far ahead.
Well, you even think it was Parma that drew with Roma as well. They're bottom of the league, so it was a point doesn't do a lot for teams at the bottom, but the confidence will maybe take from drawing with both Juventus and Roma could certainly help them in the long run about trying to recover the position in the league this year.
I actually watched the Roma game against Parma, and it wasn't even like Roma, but they did dominate, but in comparison to the sort of game you're expecting to see, it was Parma didn't look like a bottom of the table team. They had some good players going forward. I think they've brought in Silvestro Varela, who didn't really get a chance at West Brom, but he's more than a decent player.
Christian Rodriguez from Atletico as well.
I think the problem is they've so far behind. That's only them into double figures now, 10 points, so they've some distance.
The problem is the kind of financial state of the club. The fight of the place is in ruin, really.
Pisano away, not been paid, has he?
None of the players have been paid since the start of the season, I think. Yeah. I might be right, I might be wrong in that. Parma, I think, are pretty much certainties to go down. That draw was a bit of a shock, but... you know, it happens. Really.
It's a bit strange that they've not paid any players since the start of the season, yet they can afford to bring in these two new players, high-profile players.
I'm not really sure what the situation
is. It's a strange one, really.
They are, to be honest.
It begs the question of why you'd want to join a club that you know probably wouldn't be able to pay your wages as well.
Yeah.
Well, Parma, still in Italy, are a huge team. You know, they are one of the big teams, well, obviously below the kind of usual names, they are a big team.
They're a bit like Liverpool, living off their past glories.
Possibly, I think they didn't help. You know, obviously they've went sort of bust before as well. So this is just sort of another thing for.
You know what that feels like, Fisher, don't you?
we weren't quite as bad as Parma,
But you couldn't attract players like Varela to Ibrox, so could you?
Nah, that's the Serie A.
Yes. Yeah, okay. I'll be quiet.
Connor will back you up. The Scottish Championship's just as good as the Serie A.
Definitely. Looking ahead to this week's fixtures in the Serie A, you'd expect wins again for Juventus and Atlanta. Atalanta. And for Roma, they travel to Verona, who lies 16th in the table. Napoli as well, just kind of near enough the top position there. Well, not near the top, but they're sitting
looking
third.
For Champions League. Yeah,
yeah, looking for the Champions League places. They've travelled to Sassuolo. And Fiorentina, who lie in fourth position, they host Torino at home on Sunday evening.
Well, I know we need to move on, but that'll probably be the game of the weekend, I think. Fiorentina, Torino.
Torino as well, they're in Europa League action this week.
Yeah. I can't for the life of me remember who they're playing, but
I think it's. I think it should be a good game. It's set up to be a good game. So Torino, they've been going. They did well in the group stages, actually, the Europa League.
Yeah, they're a good solid team. I think they're a wee bit under the radar for winning the Europa League when you've got.
Torino, they're playing Bilbao.
Yeah, aye.
That'll be a good game.
Yeah, it should be a good game. I'd fancy Torino actually to come through.
I think Torino will go quite far. I can see Torino going farther than Inter.
Farther.
I think they've improved a lot since the group stages as well. They were lying quite close to the bottom of the table during the group stages.
They'd be good players there. I would probably say their best player is Matteo Darmian.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player.
Breaking into the
national squad, he's a really, really good player.
But I think one of the standout games will be Lazio Palermo.
Palermo are going well, aren't they? Mm. Palermo are a good side.
Aye, they're just off the back of a 3-1 win at Napoli, so. And Napoli are one of the favourites for the Europa League at the moment.
Yeah, should be interesting.
So we move on to Germany now. It was another very convincing win for Bayern Munich at the weekend. Their role at the top of the league continues to go on. It was an 8-0 win at home to Hamburg for them, Johnny. Thoughts on that one?
Well, Bayern have been struggling since the winter break. Well, not struggling. They got beat by Wolfsburg, they drew with Schalke. In Bayern's terms, that's a massive drought of points, so they got back on track with the 2-0 win against Stuttgart, but I don't think anyone really seen this coming, though we probably should have, because that's now 3-0, 4-0, 5-0, 6-0, 8-0 and 9-2 that Bayern have beaten Hamburg in the last 4 years. So, but Hamburg had gone into that off the back of 2 wins in a row, and they're just a strange team. I think they maybe went in with a bit too much confidence, just expecting to sort of, they did sit back, but they tried to soak it up a bit too much, maybe.
You'd expect them to do better, though, because they've got a lot of experience in their team, Hamburg.
Absolutely.
So you'd think they'd be going in playing a bit more cautiously. I don't know if they were, maybe. I didn't actually see the game, but I'm assuming they were probably trying to go for it and just get caught.
They tried to soak it up and counter-attack well, but didn't work
probably
at all.
Too deep.
Yeah.
And the big game, obviously, well, not the big game, most entertaining game was the obvious one. Second place, Wolfsburg, travelling to Bayer Leverkusen, winning 5-4 there. Johnny, you showed me the highlights last night. It was a very, very entertaining game, I have to say. I'll admit that live. I found it very entertaining. Johnny, your thoughts on that one?
It was a fantastic game. 9 goals, Bas Dost. Well, everyone was questioning, why do you sell Vika Olic when the only replacement's Bas Dost? How many goals he got? 8 and 5?
6 goals in 2 games.
Yeah, and eight incredible run he's on. And
he's got to be not in the Dutch squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And Heung-min Son got a hat-trick as well for Leverkusen. I think it's the first time in this century, which sounds like a long time, 15 years, that two players have scored a hat-trick, one for each team. So a very rare game with some fantastic football. Some flimsy defending, has to be said.
I'd just like to point out, Hanover, who were they playing again at the weekend, was it?
Paderborn.
Paderborn, aye. I'd just like to point out a massive congratulations to Marcelo, who bagged himself a goal after having an absolute horror week the week before. He managed to score 2 own goals the week before and missed 2 absolute sitters as well from corners, and he bagged himself a goal, so congratulations if you're listening. I highly doubt you are, but yeah.
Jonathan Walters.
Yeah, he did. He really did.
We'll just take a quick look at the bottom of the league there in Germany. It's a massive game at the weekend between Stuttgart and Dortmund. I mean, only 4 points separated teams, so really it's a 6-pointer. You'd say if Dortmund could pick up the win there, they'd be going, 7 points ahead of Stuttgart at the bottom. But if they can pull that back, they're sucked right back down to that bottom of the league.
Yeah.
And certainly it's a game that we'll be wanting to watch. I think it's on television. It's Friday night or something.
I'm sure Dortmund will be will be fancying their chances. Good result against Mainz, who aren't too bad a side. They've just sacked their manager.
Yeah.
Actually, Kasper.
Right, seeing two wins in the bounce now for them, Dortmund.
Yeah.
Martin Schmidt's come in for Mainz now. And Dortmund, I think, will win that. I think Stuttgart, I know it's very tight down there, but I think Stuttgart are pretty much down. I know that's quite a bold prediction, but I think Stuttgart, they're not really showing anything. They're not scoring many goals. And no, they're
four at home.
So I think Stuttgart will really struggle, and I think that should be a routine 3 points for Dortmund.
Thing is with Stuttgart as well, they've actually replaced their manager and nothing's changed. I mean, Armin Wey is a fantastic manager as well. He's done brilliantly with Eintracht Frankfurt last season.
Like the German Motherwell.
They've got some fantastic players as well. Eintracht, sorry,
Harnik,
Stuttgart,
guys like Harnik
and Timo Werner as well. Brilliant talent potential.
Gladbach, they get a decent result, beating Cologne.
Yeah.
1-0, a last minute Xhaka goal. A header from a tiny guy. Guys ran on in boiler suits when he scored.
Yeah, that was a bit of a strange
going
one
off. Guys running on in boiler suits, that was unbelievable scenes. So that'll put Gladbach in good form heading into their game against Sevilla in the Europa League, I think it is.
I think it's
Sevilla.
That's a battle of two teams there.
It should be a cracking game. And I think Gladbach will be going there, hoping maybe to get a point and take that back to Germany.
A point, eh?
Oh, again. This is an absolute...
A draw.
Hoping to get a draw. and having some sort of advantage going back to Germany, where their home form has been pretty good.
The thing is, they've done it against Villarreal as well. They actually did get a point there.
Yeah.
So they're experienced, and Villarreal you could compare to Sevilla. Yeah. Similar sort of team. Sevilla, arguably, the more talented team, and they'll be hoping to retain their crown, but how often does that really happen? So
just point out Bremen as well, good result for them again at the weekend. That's
five
wins in the bounce.
Five, yeah.
Unbelievable form. Really turned their season around after looking like relegation threatened during the winter break to now top half.
Schalke the weekend. Yeah. Pretty hard game.
Should be tricky, but Schalke had a poor result against Frankfurt at the weekend. Frankfurt looked well on top, and 1-0 probably flattered Schalke a wee bit. But Schalke obviously will be playing Real Madrid. So it'll be interesting to see how they react after their midweek match.
And there's interesting as well, they've got a 19-year-old in goals, Schalke.
Yeah.
I think he's their...
Wellenreuther.
Yeah, that's the one. And he's their third-choice keeper. They've had a horrible run of injuries with the goalies. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. Good luck to him.
Yeah, nothing to worry about.
So that rounds up this weekend's Friday Football Talk. We'd like to thank you for joining us. Ask you to check us out on Twitter, @FridayFootballTalk. Give us a like on Facebook. Or you can also visit our website at www.fridayfootballtalk.wordpress.com. Thanks for joining us. Tell your friends about us, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.